From WXXI News, it's Healthy Friday. Hi, thanks for being with us. I'm Matthew Leonard and hoping you can stay with us for a good part of the next 2 hours because Second Opinion is right here in around 50 minutes when Elisa Orlando and Dr. Jonathan Goldstein will be along to talk about, yes, fecal transplants and C. diff. They're not afraid to talk about touchy subjects on Second Opinion. You can go to secondopinion.tv.org to view that second hour, and on Twitter you can follow it at secondopinion.tv. So, for the first hour, we know that art has healing qualities. There's evidence that it's also a very useful practice for supporting military veterans as they readjust to civilian life. And to that end, 10 local veterans have been working as co-researchers in a research project involving art making and discussions about the challenges of transitioning from their military careers back into the community. The end product of all that work will be on show at the Our House Gallery at 783 South Avenue, and that's a facility of the Veterans Outreach Centre here in Rochester. The opening, as it happens, is tonight between 5 and 8pm. And we're joined by a really nice group of people here who have been involved in that project. I'll get them to introduce themselves as we go around the corner. Start with you, Roderick, if you'd just like to introduce yourself to the audience.
Hey, my name is Roderick Castle. I am a art therapist, case manager, and a veteran, and I work at the Veterans Outreach Center.
Great. And next to you is Noelle. Hi, Noelle. Thanks for being with us.
My name's Noelle Arend.
And my name is Marcus Davis.
And on my right is Steve.
My name is Steve Smock.
And Jennifer DeLucia. Jennifer, I'll introduce you. You're the wellness manager at the VOC. What exactly does a wellness manager do in terms of the Veterans Outreach Center's activities?
Well, our wellness program has a few different components to it. One of it is case management. So any new visitor to our center meets with someone from our wellness team who helps them get involved either in services in our center or connects them to some good resources through local VA or outside in our community here, depending on what needs they're bringing in. We also have a licensed mental health counselor and 3 full-time licensed creative arts therapists. So art therapy has been a big part of our program. We offer individual art therapy sessions. We have open studio drop-in groups that are more about veteran peer-to-peer connection and working in the studio space together. And we also, as you mentioned, have a gallery where we have veteran art shows.
So the gallery, that's like a relatively new initiative, is that? As a place to start to display the work that the veterans are doing through the process?
We're actually in the third year of gallery programming.
All right, yeah, cool. So yeah. What do I know, right? So great. How many of you guys are veterans? So Steve, Marcus, Noel, and Roderick are all veterans. And Roderick, just talk a little bit about that crossover maybe between, do you want to just give people a little bit of background context around where the level of the conversation is around the role of art therapy in supporting veterans in that sort of process of transitioning? What do we mean by transitioning? It would be a good place to start, maybe.
Well, usually when we use the term transition, it's that period, which could be anywhere from, you know, your first week out when you get discharged to years later when you're still adjusting back to civilian life, because the military experience is such an intense one. You may only be in there for 2 years, 4 years, 5 years, but you do so much living and connections with other people.
Right.
And intensity, you know, maybe traumatic events, maybe not. But just going back to an everyday civilian population is tough. And,
right.
We've all kind of experienced that in different ways. Maybe these guys could talk about some of the ways it was tough for you. I think on the way over, Marcus was saying something about riding the bus. That was a perfect example.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was a comment that I made on the way over. When you're as a soldier, everything is done orderly, is done in an orderly fashion. If we're going to get on a bus to go somewhere, or if we're going to the mess hall, you line up in an orderly fashion. You form up behind the person in front of you. So So to see a bus roll up and a crowd of people just gather around the door, you know, can be a little tough to take when you're used to, you know, when you're used to being in a forming up in a line. There is no order. It's just chaos.
Right.
And that's one of the things that for me took a long time to get used to.
So for me, you know, if I catch the bus, that's just kind of seems like it's annoying, right? Whatever. But for you, it's operating on a whole other level because of this, the sort of the imprinting and the experience and the training that you went through for military life that just gave you a completely different expectation of what that should be like, right?
Right. It just kind of goes against the grain of what I'm used to. Everything is ordered and structured.
Right. And what is that? Can you give us a sense of what that kind of does? Does it sort of create feelings in you, or does it create a sense of unease, or that you don't belong? Or how would you describe the feelings that it creates for you?
I think I think it's different for everybody. Because I used to live in the New York City area, you have to, you know, you have to take yourself out of your expectations of the way things are supposed to be.
Right.
And you just have to learn to adapt.
Right.
Part of being a soldier is being able to adapt in new situations, being able to, work with what's around you. And for myself, it is a little trying at times, but mostly it's just taking a step back and just taking my place in line and just letting everybody do whatever it is that they have to do.
Right. So Noel, does that kind of feeling make sense to you, or are there things that are different in your kind of experience of that?
Well, one thing I experienced was going to the grocery store for the first time after I got out. And I'm used to shopping in the commissary. And I could not believe the prices. And I didn't buy much.
Right. And that's a way that the reality can hit really hard when you sort of look at that.
Oh, yeah.
That sense of life on the outside through the economics of it. Yeah. Steve, is there maybe an example you can share of...
An example or sort of a challenge? My reintegration or...
Yeah, just sort of either a challenge that you identified, you know, reintegrating, yeah.
The outcomes, the challenges. Well, the healing... for me, in my journey, being involved with the healing arts as an artist, the emotional foundation. I was emotional and mental wreck, living in a hellish thought life. And what healing arts did for me, the challenge for me was to be brutally honest with myself. You know, to face the demons in the mirror, to face the man in the mirror, to come to grips with my life in the civilian world. You know, I didn't have trauma. My 4 years in the Navy was, all good. It was a win-win situation. My trauma was before and after, and for alcohol, drugs, four strikes before you're 20, and before I went in the military.
Right.
And that was the challenge for me when I first went in the Navy was, this is my last hope for in 23 years old. This was my life was over at 23 in my own mind. And so it wasn't a patriotic reason why I joined, it was economic.
Right.
And so.
And it kind of provided a buffer, it sounds like, in your life that you're saying was positive, but then when you got out of the Navy, there you were again. You were still there, and you had to go back and deal with some of those issues.
Maybe. Yeah, my reintegration back in civilian life. You know, I mean, in the like Roderick was saying, and Marcus and Noel, You know, it's you got a team. Everybody's got your back. You know, you're working in a team, mm-hmm. and going and you know, and that, it was my mindset. I was on top of the world, excited about, you know, because I was going to go back in, and I was excited about, you know, getting back into civilian life, and I was on top of the world. Nothing I can't do. And then I found, you know, I got a DWI, and that just, you know. I became a real bad alcoholic in the Navy, you know. But that's just one of the issues. There's.
Could I just ask you a bit more about something? So, the group, something that I understand, just doing some reading around art therapy, you know, and the kind of process is that the getting back into a group and being able to work that stuff through in a group dynamic seems to be really helpful and a really important part of the process.
It's incredible. I've been going to individual one-on-one sessions, art therapy, and for the last year, open studio with other veterans. And for me, my life, the art therapy for me was getting out that poison, getting out all the bad things in my life. The fear and, being honest and truthful and facing the man in the mirror. And what I did for the first 3 or 4 years, which is all I created, was all negative. I do word and colors and symbols painting. Right. That's what I, real simple, basic
yep.
things. And so I got that out. And to tell you the truth, it saved my life. The Healing Arts Program at Veterans Outreach Center saved my life mentally and emotionally. And now today, being clean and sober for a couple of years, and working in at the spiritual health, I'm back in union with my spiritual path.
Right. So, did you need to awaken some emotions within yourself? I mean, was that a part of the practices? As you know, what was kind of going through your head or your heart when you're doing your work in that context?
It was a therapy. It was a release. This weight, this burden, in my own head, telling another human being the demons, the trauma, the issues, being brutally honest and sharing it, and it's like a release. The artwork, I get it out of me, and mm-hmm. it's like sets you free. For me, that's what art does for me.
Right.
It sets me free. Emotional. I'm an emotional artist.
Right.
And then if I can chime in real quick.
Sure.
And then for somebody like Steve to then get that out and then put it up on a wall and have right. others witness it, that's a big step.
I think that really speaks to what happens in the open studio format, you know, the veteran support amongst group members, and that this sharing and this conversation happens even if the veterans sitting in the room aren't talking about their personal emotional experiences. It's there in the room in their artwork. So they're sharing that conversation, sometimes in a way that feels more comfortable through metaphor and symbols and stories that are shared in the artwork. And then over time, bonds form and people become more comfortable sharing things openly and taking in some of that support from veteran peers. And hearing you talk about it, Steve, thinking about our Wednesday night open studio group, just the energy that's in that space when there's 8 veterans together making artwork, just talking about day-to-day stuff is really powerful.
Yeah. So, Noel, had you done art before? I mean, before you'd done your service, were you interested in art at all, or had you taken it seriously?
I liked art, but I was never good at it. And I really wasn't working in art so much this past spring, summer, and fall. I started a garden out back of the VLC.
Right.
And that was my...
That was the way that you...
Mm-hmm.
That was the way you started to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to dig your hands in the earth and feel it and watch the plants grow and being able to harvest the vegetables.
Right. So it's kind of like, it sounds like a sort of a healing environment, part mm-hmm. of a healing environment, really, where you're able to participate in things and you feel productive and you have control over things. And were there, you know, to the extent you feel comfortable, were there particular things that you were trying to address, or was it just a general sense of well-being that you wanted to sort of regain?
general sense of well-being.
Yeah. 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 And Marcus, did you have any interest in art before?
Well, actually, when I first came to Rochester, I've only been a resident since 2011. I appreciate different art forms, but as far as any sort of creativity, I had there was a long period of time where I felt as though I didn't have any sort of creativity or any sort of imagination, and I remember remarking in one of our groups that sometimes when you're trying to make art or simply trying to express some sort of emotion or being able to get in touch with something in your head, sometimes it could be something as simple as making geometric designs with colored pencils, because sometimes the colors colors are often associated with different emotions and different feelings, and sometimes you can connect a particular memory or a particular emotion that you're struggling with that color, for instance, black, you know, or red, and over time to trying different things, or Steve does word art, you have someone else that does pencil sketches, you know, you start from, you don't have to be an artist, you don't have to know how to do anything other than making lines on paper with pencils or crayons, doing something, you know, that's where it starts. And to be able to focus your energy and your thoughts into something, you know, maybe it helps to give you something to focus on while you're talking about something that you're struggling with.
And is it a place maybe where you can confront things through the metaphor or through colours and associations that you can't do verbally, or you couldn't do in a conversation, at least not initially?
For myself, absolutely. I've been able to talk about certain things that I've never discussed before, ever. And I have been able to use art to, I've been able to use art to really put certain memories out there for the world to see, you know, kind of spiritually is kind of like ripping the Band-Aid off so that the air can get in and heal it, you know. If you can use that as an analogy, spiritually, emotionally, that's what it's been like addressing certain things.
Right. So, Roderick, I know I had experience, for example, doing reporting in South Africa after there'd been a lot of election-related violence, and they were using art to help children who'd witnessed and experienced really horrific things to sort of find some way of unlocking and starting conversations so that some sort of process of healing could begin. And so just tell us a little bit about the traditions of art therapy, because it's a really interesting story how it kind of developed, and I'm sure Jennifer can chime in on this too, but just that it's something that's really played a very important role in our understanding of the processes of psychological and spiritual healing, I think.
Yeah, the development of psychology, you know, some people started, you know, Carl Jung, he's a, he worked with Freud. He kind of started to branch off, realizing that a lot of people he was doing therapy with were not verbal, you know, not overtly verbal. And he did his own artwork for his own healing process, and he started having clients do artwork, and that was, you know, you could kind of consider him one of the founders back in the day, before it was even called art therapy. And then maybe Jen could talk about some of the history, you know, starting the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, well, when I started doing some background literature review for our research project, I think you mentioned that the veterans here are part of a co-research team. We've been working out of the studio. Looking back through the history around art therapy and veterans, it actually dates back to the 1950s. An art therapist, Mary Huntoon, who was working in a VA hospital, kind of in a similar format that we are, in a studio space where veterans could come in as part of their treatment and work on paintings and self-expression. So a lot of people think that the field is relatively new, but we've been around for a long time, and you know there's been healing in the arts well before that. That's, you know, the foundation of our practice.
Right, and I mean people like Jean Dubuffet, for example, who was interested in the work of people who were
outside
conventional, yeah, mm-hmm. either through because of their mental health, or people who were prisoners or who'd been in institutions and so on. It was a way of giving voice to people who were disempowered in some way, or who didn't have some other means. So tell us a little bit about how does what these guys have been doing fit into a sort of a bigger research project, and why would you do a research project?
Well, really, my inspiration for even going for the doctorate came from the Veterans Outreach Center and the benefits that I was seeing in the studio, the veterans that were working in the art therapy program. So I picked a model of research that's not research on a particular population, it's research with. So we formed a co-research team with 10 veterans where people were able to explore their experiences with. We ended up calling it transition. A lot of the times in the literature, people refer to it as readjustment, reintegration, and our group felt that transition was a much more fitting word. So we explored some of the experiences around that and then how art therapy has helped everybody in sort of different and distinct ways depending on what parts of the program people have been involved in. And the result of the project really is to bring about some change. One, to bring our findings, if you will, in the form of art into the community and as an education piece around what veteran transition looks like, you know, right from the perspective of veterans who have gone through it and are going through it. And also to inform people on how art therapy helps and hopefully help more programs consider opening up services like we have.
Right. So it sounds like you're trying to get a kind of a research benchmark there, which becomes a point of comparison for people to look at ways they can establish their other projects that mm-hmm. can achieve similar outcomes.
And in the art therapy literature, a lot of what's been talked about in art therapy with veterans is really focused on post-traumatic stress. Which is, you know, it's very real for a lot of people, but it can be just one piece of transition. That transition, in a sense, encompasses many more different things outside of post-traumatic stress, if that's one piece for that particular veteran. So we felt it was important to be able to talk about that whole transition experience through our art show.
So if you've just joined us, it's Healthy Friday. That was Jennifer DeLucia, who's working at the Our House Gallery, coordinating a project as part of a team of people, veterans, art therapists, and the show opens tonight, right? 5 till mm-hmm. 8 o'clock, 783 South Avenue. And we're talking about the power of art to support military veterans transition back into civilian life. And with Jennifer is Roderick, Noel, Marcus, and Steve, who are all part of the project as well. So I wondered, so just to talk a little bit more about the PTSD issue, and this is something that's become, there's a lot more literature and conversations around how profound PTSD, what a profound impact it can have on people and their ability to feel well, you know, mm-hmm. just to feel well and to kind of function. So how does, can you give us a sense of maybe how the processes of art therapy kind of address some of the things that we understand PTSD can create from people, like the hypervigilance, mm-hmm. some of the other kind of ways in which PTSD can manifest in people's lives?
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing is it helps people to sit with emotions in a very safe way. So emotions can cause a lot of anxiety and make people feel, you know, very uncomfortable, which makes it difficult to talk about things in therapy. But to be able to work on something in the form of a picture, a clay project, a garden, whatever that looks like, that is a process in dealing with that emotion, whether it's visually represented or through words, as Steve does. It gives that person, it grounds that person in a way that they're able to sit with and work through that emotion in ways that maybe they wouldn't in just the sitting and talking part of therapy, where, you know, we might touch on it briefly and then topic is changed and we move on to something else. You know, it sort of creates that sort of holding environment to process some of the more difficult stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and to create their own symbology around, you know, their what happened to them, like their own kind of visual language. And it's something the art therapist can keep going back to with them. And then you can do new pieces of work using the same kind of images and colors and really transition it from a place of fear and, you know, trauma to a place of healing and transition to something else. So
right. And there are a lot of associated conditions. So, for example, people who have PTSD can... you know, depression is an issue, or they can have difficulty with mm-hmm. sleeping, and mm-hmm. those things can really underpin a lot of that stuff. But I'm just wondering too about self-esteem, because clearly self-esteem yeah. is a really big part of, I think, the overall kind of picture. Does that kind of make sense to you, Noel? Yeah. Was self-esteem, part of the conversation for you?
Yes, it was.
And so, can you tell us a little bit about how do you think your self-esteem changed? When did you start to notice that maybe your self-esteem was changing? At what point?
When my garden started growing.
Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so you could see the benefits.
The work I was putting into it, I could see what was happening.
Right.
And I was able to share the harvest with everybody at the VOC.
Right. So there was something that you were doing that also created benefits for other people as part of the group as well. So it was, yeah.
I think that happened with Noelle's garden. And that also happens when we bring our pictures into an exhibit in our gallery space. There have been many veterans who have seen someone else's picture up on the wall, and it's really resonated with their personal experience. And that has then allowed them to be able to open up in therapy and start to work on that piece for themselves. Where maybe had they not, you know, realized that someone else was going through the same experience, it would have, you know, kept tucked in there for longer. One of the things, just to kind of go back to the art therapy and PTSD piece, there is a really good research article out there, Art Therapy and Combat PTSD. But one of the things that I really appreciate about the art therapy process is that it's very strength-based, and that we learn new things about ourselves and about our capabilities through our art process. Mm-hmm. Like when we talk about creativity, you know, and starting to define yourself as creative is more than just about being an artist or defining yourself as an artist. You know, we all know how important creativity is. It opens us up to new ways of looking at problems in our life and, you know, just kind of tackling some of those areas that we've needed to address, but we haven't felt capable of, which I think goes back to the self-esteem piece, like Noelle was talking about.
And so, Marcus, I think I understand there've been like some conversations. Tell us a little bit about what are sort of some of the conversations that people have got into around the work that everyone's been doing and sharing during the studio process.
Well, I think there's been. There's been a few things, but just take a slight step back. When you're in active duty, you're with a group of people. Whatever is going on in your life, you have a core group of people that you're with at all times. You know, and in terms of the post-traumatic stress, maybe it isn't so much something that's diagnosed. Maybe the stressful part is that when you come back into the civilian world, it's just you. You know, when you're going down the street, you don't have a company of people with you anymore. It's just you walking down the street, and sometimes the hard part of the adjustment is being that one lone individual. If I can just try to stay away from science fiction references, and being in the open studio at the Veterans Outreach Center, you're with a group of people who are struggling with the same sort of issues. You're there with fellow veterans, regardless of your branch of service, and there is that camaraderie, and also we're there for the same thing. It allows us to express things that can't often be said with words alone.
Right.
Sometimes you can write it, you can draw it, you can paint it, but you can't always sit and say it. And to be able to have all of that together within the within the art therapy framework, that really helps to for me, it helped to establish a sense of self-esteem that I never had before, to be able to look at something and say, I did that. You know, to have someone walk up to something that you've created and it resonated deeply with somebody, you know, to the point where you're having a long conversation or you could see their eyes welling up in tears at their own memories. You know, there is something about that. You know, there is some sort of meaning to your own life again. And a lot of people struggle with that. You know, whether they were a soldier or just your average person out there in the street. And for me, that's been one of the huge recovery tools, is being able to discover art.
Yeah. Just a note for John. So there's Syracuse. That's Syracuse numbers, rather than Rochester numbers. Okay. All right. So we're just going to take a short break. We're going to stay with our guests here talking about art therapy and reintegration of military veterans. We've got plenty to talk about. Thanks for sharing that, Steve. And we're going to come back after this short break. And you're back with Healthy Friday. I'm Matthew Leonard. This is usually Connections from WXXI News, but today it's Healthy Friday. And coming up is Second Opinion TV Live. That'll be with Elisa Orlando and Dr. Jonathan Goldstein. And they'll be talking about C. diff. It's a really debilitating bacterium that can affect people's intestines. And they're looking at some solutions. And you can follow that at Second Opinion TV on Twitter. And with me in the studio, a group of veterans, art therapists, all part of a project that's been looking at the way in which art therapy can support a feeling of wellness and reintegration into civilian communities. And before we took the break, Marcus was sharing some really great insights, I think, into that whole sort of process. And this is something I wanted to put to maybe to Jennifer and Roderick here as well, is that balance of... sometimes people say art therapy, oh, it's just about the process. It doesn't matter what the end result is. It doesn't matter if it looks good, if it can hang on a gallery wall or any of that stuff, that it's just in the act of doing it is where all the benefits come. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And it comes up a lot in the studio because it is both. Because sometimes there's a lot of therapeutic benefit in being able to see a project to completion and feel like it has turned out good. You know, feel like it's something that you want to put up in the gallery or that you want to hang in your living room. So again, like you're saying, there is a lot of focus on process, you know, and just getting people in and encouraging people to just be playful and try the process initially, you know, and then later on, if there's a need around, you know, having something come out nice and polished like that, certainly the art therapist would work with that particular person around some of the skills, art techniques and things like that that will help that happen.
Right. So what about you, Steve? Is it the kind of do you worry about like the end result, what things look like, or is it just that while you're on the journey, that's when all the good stuff happens? Or do you know, what's your
combination of both? It's for me, it's impulse. I'm sort of like what's in my thoughts and my emotions comes out in my paintings or my words. I do word art. Writing, it just natural, it just comes out, and I get it on paper or canvas, and it's a win-win situation for me. It just feels good. It feels very good.
And does that make you feel like you want to continue to build your skills? I mean, do you feel like you've sort of plateaued, and that's okay, or do you feel like you're now challenging yourself to come up with stuff that you feel is kind of continuing to sort of improve?
For me to reflect on that, I'm comfortable with my creative style, my art, my music, my writing. It's a raw. It's just comes out. It's natural for me. I'm sort of like this is who I am, and okay, and hopefully it will. And move on to the next project. And I'm always going forward to, you know, what's the next project? You know, what's the next show? Or, you know, what other good can I do? Goodness.
Yeah.
And Steve can be a little modest. He had a solo show in our gallery, and there are many veterans who have said that it's their favorite show that they've gone to. He filled the space, floor to ceiling, with the word art and just the beautiful, intense colors and really honest, emotional words that Steve put up on the wall really, really spoke to visitors in a powerful way.
Yeah, I bet there were some interesting conversations that came out through that process. So I guess they're going to stay with us. I just wanted to bring in another voice in this conversation and some useful information, and we'll come back and close out the program with you all. But we're just going to cross now to a slightly different but related issue, which is the Syracuse University College of Law has just launched the first comprehensive veterans legal clinic in New York State. And it's intended to address what's identified as one of the top five needs that veterans and military families have, which is access to legal services and legal support. So we're glad to be joined on the phone from Syracuse. The Director of External Relations for the clinic is retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Joseph Lamondola. He's also a former judge advocate. Thank you, sir, for joining us to talk about the Veterans Law Clinic at University of Syracuse.
You're quite welcome.
So tell us a little bit about this. This was just launched last week. I understand the formal launching of the center.
Yes, that's correct. Through the genius, quite frankly, of two very, very gifted individuals, both recently graduated from law school.
Right.
Came up, Josh Heath and Tom Crusoe, both, as I said, recently graduated and both going on to the Marine Corps and the Navy JAG programs, respectively, were the brainchild behind this endeavor. And last week it was opened, and the understanding, or at least the notion, is to provide free legal services to veterans in Central New York, and the bandwidth obviously is going to grow exponentially as the need arises. Veterans are coming off active duty, and as well as veterans from former generations have a need for upgrading discharges for purposes of filing claims or any other number of issues that come up, and we are there to provide legal support.
Great. Well, I'm in a room with some veterans right now. I'm sure who are paying close attention to that. What sort of demand are you aware of in terms of the kind of immediate needs, perhaps, of recent and longer term veterans who need to maybe deal with issues around access to services or have their benefits reviewed, that kind of thing?
Well, I think if you listened to the mainstream media discuss not only the problems encountered in the medical facilities, the VA, but also the Veterans Administration and how difficult it is to get a claim through the process. I believe June of 2014, there was a report that was generated that talked about approximately 1.4, 1.3 million claims having been filed. And out of those, around half those are in some state of being continually processed, delayed, et cetera. And from the standpoint of the veteran who put his life on the line for his country, he goes off to a deployment and comes back not the person that he was because of a variety of issues, and he encounters these continual delays. It's not fair to the veteran. So the clinic is there to provide assistance in legal assistance in terms of processing that claim through the VA, the possibility of handling the appeal, or even more so, the military member who's been court-martialed or discharged administratively, and they're not able to avail themselves of the VA hospital and all the related medical benefits because of the quality of the type of the discharge. The clinic is going to assist those members upgrading, or at least attempting to upgrade that discharge.
Right, and so what would the process be? Is it do people need to be able to have a case assessed, and then the clinic agrees to take it on, or can you give us a sense of a little bit of the kind of the workflow?
Sure.
What sort
sure.
of flow there would be? Yeah,
sure. There's an experiential factor here as well. The clinic is comprised of an internal director, a woman by the name of Yelena Duterte, who was an expert, a professor, so to speak, at John Marshall Law School, and she's now basically the professor that's going to be teaching the students. And I believe at the moment there are 8 or 9 students that have signed up for the program. They are going to be deputized, so to speak, or they're going to be student lawyers who are going to be handling intake, so to speak. We are going to be manning a part-time office at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Syracuse, and they're going to come into the clinic once they've been provided their information to verify, you know, the basis of the need for the legal service, and from there, depending on what needs to be done, the law students with the supervision of the professor are going to assist in those claims. There's also, if in fact the military members or the veterans issue can't be handled because of the nature of the claim by the law, the Veterans Law Clinic, SU Law School has an overlapping clinic as it relates to taxation, bankruptcy, domestic relations, and other endeavors, and they will be given a first look by the law clinic, Veterans Law Clinic, and if they're not able to be handled by the Veterans Law Clinic, then they will be referred to the other outlying disciplines within the clinic, and if that isn't enough to provide assistance, we also have a pro bono network in the community that's going to basically be the backstop if the clinic is unable to help them.
Great.
So we're very excited, and quite frankly, we believe there's a need, and it's only a matter of time before we are at full capacity.
Right, with 60,000 veterans living in central New York. So you've got some overlapping services there, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Colonel, for being with us. retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Joseph Lamondola, who's the Director of External Relations, is also a former judge advocate and has a private law practice in Syracuse. He's been with us to explain the newly launched Veterans Legal Clinic at the Syracuse University College of Law. Thank you so much.
Before you cut me off, are there any veterans that have any questions for me?
Well, that's great. We've got about 3 minutes, so I'm curious to see if any of the folks here have a question.
How you doing, sir? This is Roger Castle. I'm a Marine Corps veteran. Just wanted to let you know.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir. Just wanted to let you know this is a huge, huge need, and I think you guys are gonna fill a good slot there at Syracuse. Hopefully, it'll expand out our way eventually. We have some help here, but great idea and definitely a need.
Well, if you have any veteran service organizations that you would like a briefing or an overview, please, I'll give you my email address or my phone number. Call me, and I would be more than glad to drive over there and provide whatever information I can. There is an attorney, by the way. Josh Keith lives in Rochester, and he's part of the clinic. At some point, he's going off to the Marine Corps, but I am certain that he would absolutely enjoy meeting with you as well, just to provide an overview, and I would as well. So, you know, feel free to call or drop me an email.
Excellent.
Great. Thanks, Colonel. I'll pass on those contact details to our friends here, and they can connect with you that way.
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me to your program.
Thanks for your time today. So, and just wondering how that kind of some of the things that Colonel was talking about, some of the challenges, does that kind of ring true for any of you as well? In terms of, was that something that you found difficult accessing good advice around those kinds of issues when you were coming out of service?
Well, I think in the beginning, as far as I think in the beginning, a lot of veterans do have a need for legal services, probably more so than any of the medical or educational benefits. You know, having a central organization, because there could be legal issues that they're coming home to. Maybe it's needing the help of the Judge Advocate General's office with accessing specific information in their service record, and without the services of this of the Syracuse practice, you know, there would be a lot of floundering around. And And I personally have not had that great of a need, so I can't really say a whole lot from my own perspective. But I do know that there are quite a few people that have, you know, that do need this kind of help.
Yeah, and it relates a lot to health issues, clearly, too, in many cases. So, thank you. So with a little bit of time left, I guess just to quickly remind people that the Transitions show is on at the Open House Gallery, 783 South Avenue. It opens tonight at 5 o'clock. I'm sure you can probably meet the group who've been with you for this past hour. But wanted to close to ask, maybe start with you, Steve. What would you hope comes out of the project and the exhibition that opens tonight?
For the individuals that are participating and contributed to the show through their work in whatever medium, that they can be encouraged and uplifted, and by participating, just by having their work in the show, to help them feel good about themselves.
Yeah. And Noel, what would you like to see come out of the exhibition process?
For people to take pride in what they've done, and to actually come out and show something in public.
And Roderick, what's the sort of the next step, do you think, from on kind of building on this process? You're hoping to keep, I mean, is this about keeping the group together as well in a lot of ways?
Yeah, and it's going to be a unifying thing. And then more exposure for our open studio program. I mean, it's gotten really popular lately. We've got three days a week going. Mm-hmm. May need to expand that a little bit because we got more and more people asking. So,
right,
more vets that want to come hang out and make art.
So as the art becomes visible and the stories get told, then you're anticipating more and more people are going to want to become a part, going to want to be included.
And to think back to the reasons why the 10 veterans that are on this co-research team joined, what everybody said is, I'm doing this because I want to help other veterans. I want other veterans to know about my experience. I want other veterans to know that these services are available. So my hope for this evening, as it relates to that wish of the group, is that veterans come and participate in the opening tonight and get to meet some of the co-researchers and get to see the artwork.
Great.
We'd love to have visitors.
Thank you. That's Jennifer DeLucia and Steve, Marcus, Noel, and Roderick. Thanks so much for being with us on Healthy Friday. All the best with it. Look forward to getting out and seeing the artwork, sharing some of the stories that are going to come out of that. You're with WXXI 1370 and WRUR. And coming up after the news is Second Opinion TV Live. Stay with us for that. Thank you.